Welcome once again to our series on Dies Domini, the Day of the Lord, the apostolic letter of Pope John Paul II, in which he wrote about the long history of the Day of the Lord, from the third commandment being given to Moses on Mount Sinai up into our present time. And of course, keep holy the Lord's Day is the theme, so the Lord's Day can keep us holy, whole, and wholesome. That the Lord's Day, or the Sabbath, is for us. It's not for God's benefit, but it's for our benefit. My guest once again is Ron Eldred, who is the professor of religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High, teaches world history and U.S. history, also had taught sociology in his background as a teacher. So, Ron, welcome once again. We've been talking about all the statistics that have shown there is a great major decline in attendance in Holy Mass in the United States ever since Vatican Council II, 1962-65, as well as across the Western world, as to where in some Western countries, particularly affluent countries, attendance at a weekly Mass may be down to 9 or 6% in some of the places in old Catholic Holland. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to analyze the cultural reasons for that. And, of course, I think you began with saying that one of the biggest problems seemed to be a loss in the sense or Catholic sense of belief in the real presence of the Eucharist. And then we were talking about some of the influences in our culture, our surrounding, our society, that led to this loss of faith among ourselves as Catholic. We talked about skepticism and rationalism and materialism and relativism and then hedonism. And I think you have suggested that of all those five, and of course there are many others, but that relativism, which Pope Benedict XVI had called the dictatorship of our time, that there isn't any truth. We can't really know if anything is right or wrong. We kind of make it up ourselves. And then what the other was hedonism?
At the practical level, I would say that hedonism and materialism.
Which are kind of the same thing.
Yeah, in other words, by materialism, the desire for material goods and services and things, even far beyond what we need, you know. In other words, to the point of gluttony.
And inordinate.
Yes.
Unbalanced.
Right. And then the other, of course, hedonism is would be an inordinate desire for pleasure, okay. For having fun. And, of course, this would deal with such things as gluttony, overeating, and overdrinking, and sexual addictions, and all kinds of things of that sort.
Getting high on drugs.
Yes, drugs, yes, okay. Very much so. Yes.
All right, well, let's go on then. We talked about how these isms, like being too focused on material rather than the spiritual, inordinate or excessive desire for pleasure and material wealth, cars and houses and clothes and the likes, the thing that we all are attracted to, and there's so much advertising about,
sure.
That are good in themselves, but it becomes our focus rather than seeking first the kingdom of God,
right.
As Jesus told us. So could we talk a little bit about the sociological reasons? I know you taught sociology back in college when you were studying for your doctorate. How has that affected our decline in attendance at Holy Mass on the Lord's Day and the concomitant or the concurring loss of sense of belief in the real presence?
Well, to begin with, I'll tell you a little bit about what sociology is. It involves the way a society is structured and the way it functions or operates, as opposed to the culture is the way of life of the people, including the material things and, I might add, the spiritual things as well, and the ideas and what have you. That's what we looked at in the last couple of meetings. And several sociological reasons could be given for a loss of faith among Americans and the people of other affluent nations as well. But I think one of the main reasons was that The rising of later generations of Catholics into the middle and upper classes has been one of the most important factors in their secularization. And by secularization, I mean a this-worldly orientation, rather than an other-worldly orientation.
Okay.
Essentially, that's what I mean by secular. It's a this-worldly orientation as opposed to an other-worldly orientation.
So a great emphasis on material and here, and a kind of loss of the sense of the spiritual and
yes.
hereafter.
And right. The opposite, of course, of secular is spiritual. That's
okay.
More affluent people, sociological studies will prove this, that more affluent people tend to be more secular-minded. They tend to be more this-worldly-minded. Now, we don't have time to go into reasons why that's true. There are, a lot could be speculated and dealt with on that. But an equally important sociological factor that had contributed to the secularization of the American people, and Catholics, of course, is an increase in their educational levels.
All right, now since the church has always, throughout history, the founder of the universities in the Middle Ages, and always stressed the importance of education, how does that fit in?
Well, the education of the Middle Ages, particularly as it developed in the High Middle Ages, the 13th, the 12th, and 13th centuries, even up to about 1350 in the 14th century, was a highly spiritually oriented education. But that's not the kind of education we get anymore. The kind of education we get in our secular schools, including a grade school and high school and middle school and college, is a more secular, this worldly oriented type.
All right, well, let's come back then. You're saying that educational, two things have caused us as Catholics, increased prosperity, a rising in our economic status, to the middle and upper classes.
To the middle and
upper
certainly classes.
And certainly as Catholics, we've done that over the years, amazingly. And then the level of education doesn't necessarily help a person to be more spiritually minded.
Well, it's the kind of education you're getting.
Sure.
If you have a purely secular education and moral relativism is taught there, that's the official. So there's no doubt secular humanism is the official religion taught in the public school system.
Okay. And because they really can't teach religious.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't even
but
speak
that
it.
Is, even the Supreme Court has recognized secular humanism as a religion.
Oh, really?
So they are basically teaching religion, but it's not the religion that, it's not our religion.
You mean the Supreme Court as officially recognized?
There was a case, I don't recall, back a number of years ago that had to do with relativism and situation ethics and secular humanism,
okay.
which is the, you might say, the religious aspect of
the world.
Relativism and what have you. But Catholics, as they become more affluent, they have become more materialistic, more this-worldly oriented. As they become more educated, they have become more secular-minded, I might say miseducated.
Okay. I know, unfortunately, some people who have lost their faith going to so-called Catholic universities. So we're talking then about prosperity rise, educational I think it was the Duke of Wellington who defeated Napoleon at Waterloo, who had the famous saying, educate a person without religion, and you make them but a clever devil.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Well, is there any other thing you'd like to throw in?
Urbanization is another sociological factor that has contributed to the secularization of the American people, including Catholics.
So the growth of the cities.
Yes, the growth of the cities.
Okay.
Urban people tend to be more secular in their way of thinking. And again, we don't have time in this. It used to take me a whole semester or two to teach why that's true.
Okay.
So we certainly wouldn't have time to do that here. Another is industrialization. Correlated with a weakening of religious faith, probably because industrial economies produce more goods and services, and that tends to make us more comfortable, makes life safer, makes us more oriented towards the acquisition of things, that kind of thing tends to make us, as we become more affluent, we tend to become more materialistic.
I know he had a profound influence on me. When I was studying new churches to build our new church in Rockville, I visited many other churches, Protestant and Catholic, to get some ideas. And one of the Lutheran pastors who was good enough to talk to me, he made a statement that kind of shocked me. And the more I thought about it, he said, you know, I've come to learn that the only thing the human person cannot survive is prosperity. And he was talking spiritually, of course. Sure. But I just thought, oh, that's the very thing you're saying. As we advance materially, which is a good thing to advance materially, and we get better educated without... I think it was Pope John the 23rd who said, too often we are becoming spiritually, intellectually giants and spiritually dwarfs. And that's that we're not keeping pace in our religious education with our secular education.
Well, these things we've been talking about, affluence, and they tend to make life, you know, a lot more safer. They make it a lot more secure in a lot of ways. Comfortable from a physical point of view. They, in our pride, they tend to make us think that it's awfully easy to get to think that you deserve it, or I got it on my own, and it's awfully easy a lot of times to forget about God, and that's where it ultimately comes from.
And wasn't that the main problem that the scriptures in the Old Testament keep talking about, the chosen people?
Oh, yes.
They got affluent, and then they forgot about God. And then they got into trouble, and they came back to God, and then they got affluent. And it was just almost a vicious cycle.
Yeah, we went through that sordid cycle when we had our discussion on the Nicene Creed. We went in through that. That's really the kind of the history of the Old Testament, is that cycle of prosperity and then back.
Falling away
from
God.
God, and particularly with idolatry and, again, secularism, materialism.
Hedonism
and the kind of thing we've been talking about.
Got pulled into the pagan worship.
So God would send the prophets and warn them, and they kicked the prophets out of town
and killed them.
And then so God punished them, or allowed them to be punished, and then they would fall to their knees for a little while, and then they would come back to God, and they would begin to prosper again. As soon as they prosper again, same old thing started over again.
Even the chosen people of the New Testament had the same problem as the chosen people of the Old.
That's right. Well, you know, the way we look at it, the Catholic Church is the continuation of the chosen people, the people of God. And so, again, we're not much different than what the old chosen people were.
Well, I think one of the things that Pope Benedict XVI has been saying is that perhaps we really, as Catholics, have to expect some kind of added purification if we're going to really get back to a complete and personal devotion to following Jesus and the teachings of the Church.
I hate to think of what that purification could be, or whatever. I used to paint scenarios with my students over in the middle school of various kinds of things it would take to bring the American people and the Western European people, and now the Japanese people are becoming more and more affluent, even the Irish.
Oh, they're losing their faith.
To bring us all to our knees, you know. It would take something 10 times or 100 times or 1,000 times greater than 9/11.
Well, that certainly shook us, but it didn't seem to carry through.
Well, you know, there are... You watch these programs on the Discovery Channel, and you hear about these mega tsunamis that could be produced by earthquakes out in the ocean, or big landslides in the Canary Islands or in Hawaii that could put a 1,000-foot wave. I used to paint all kinds of real scenarios with my kids to make it real graphic as possible. And at the same time, you have the Canary Islands, a 1,000-foot wave coming toward the United States, and then one in the West Coast coming towards the West Coast of the United States. Then you have the 9-point mega earthquake right in the middle of the New Madrid Fault, right up through the middle of the Midwest. And we all really get, it takes something like that to probably drive us to our knees and to really shake us up.
Well,
at least those of us who survived this.
Sure. Well, it is, as you say, the history of the Old Testament, and you know, such just the messages of Fatima. If we as Catholics don't come back to the basis of our faith and put a God first, then we're going to have worse things than communist Russia taking over the country.
Well, I mean,
the
remember,
world.
One of the warnings was that another great war will happen, and World War II was by far the worst and most devastating thing that ever happened to the human race.
And that was prophesied in 1917.
Back in 1917.
And it didn't start until, what, 1939?
1939.
When Hitler
September
invaded Poland.
When, that's right, when Hitler invaded Poland.
Okay, well, let's go on. I don't think you mentioned the other things you had talked about before. Another thing that in our sociological framework about science and...
Yeah, I think science and technology has contributed in various ways to the secularization of Americans, because it's awfully easy, taken together with the other ideas that they have, to get to the idea that... this method is the only method, and that in the minds of some people, excludes any spiritual explanation or any spiritual cause for anything. So everything is explained in material naturalistic. That's another term we didn't talk about.
Okay.
But it's a natural explanation. No supernatural explanation is needed.
So we live in this, we all live in this environment.
Yes.
Science and technology, added education, but perhaps not without a religious complement, the idea of affluence. The more we have, the more we tend to not think of spiritual ideals and inspirations and
God. Well, technology is the application of scientific knowledge to the solving, or I might add, the creating of human problems. And because, you know, it's like a fire, it can be used for good or bad. It's like a double-edged sword. It can be used for good or evil.
Well, atomic energy.
Yes, it can be used for power, generation of power, but also can be used to destroy the human race.
Sure. Right?
And not just to serve them. But what happens is technology gives us the ability in the Western world and anywhere else in the world where they adapt it and apply it to controlling the environment more and more. And then increasing our way of life, making us more affluent, and so it just sort of feeds that kind of thing. And again, it's just another step. Man in his pride gets to believe after a while that he's responsible for this, and that it isn't ultimately God who basically is revealing through science how God did it. Mm-hmm. Like I tell my students in mathematics, mathematics is nothing more than the quantification of what God has created. And certainly if you look at physics or chemistry and whatever, that's all it is. It's just putting it into mathematical terms. But it's easy for man to come to the view, make that big step, you know, that he's created all of this and I'm the boss and all that kind of thing. And
well, wasn't it basically we're all still struggling with the temptation of Adam and Eve? I don't want to be dependent on God. I want to be God.
Well, what's the old, how's it go? My will, not your will be done, but my will be done.
It's just the opposite.
I've heard you use that in sermons.
What Jesus taught
us. Little kids.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go on. Is anything else you see as a factor sociologically, in terms of what has been taught?
Well, this is a rather delicate subject, but I don't really want to pull punches on it too much. After Vatican II, the theological liberals or neo-modernists in the church virtually, I think, took over various institutions in the church, especially in this country, but a lot of the European countries as well. And as I said, although the subject is a sensitive one and a very complex one, by neo-modernist, I mean those who want to water down the teachings of the church to better suit the modern world. Now, modernism is a much, much more complex concept than that, but that's basically what I mean by it here.
All right, and couldn't we say, in defense of those who wanted to adapt the teachings of the church to the real world, was often a good attempt to deal with Vatican Council was trying to put the teachings of the church in to be intelligible by modern man and woman.
I think if you look at it the way that John Paul did, the way that Joseph Ratzinger did, who was a peritus at that time, an advisor, a theological advisor, and the people that influenced them so much, such as Henri de Lubac and Danielou, Cardinal who became a Cardinal Danielou, and Fum Balthasar, people like that, then that's good. I think the kind of things, the kind of theology that they were wanting the church to adapt, and that's reflected in the documents, the Vatican documents, I think was good. The problem is there was a whole group of others who wanted to carry it much, much further. People like Hans Küng, Edward Schielebeeks, Karl Rahner, and a number of other theologians who really took it way too far. In fact, they're the ones that later on Cardinal Ratzinger had difficulties with. In fact, even took the priestly faculties away from some of them, or their ability to be at least a theologian.
In the
case
Catholic
of Hans Küng, for example.
Catholic University.
Yes.
I think he was still able to be a priest, but couldn't teach in a Catholic university.
Charles Curran, I think you're probably referring to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And now the liberal, by that, and that's, again, a very, very complex subject. If you study history, you would find out that that's a rather complex term. But I mean by those who wanted to make substantial changes in the church, and far more so than what was advisable or good or acceptable or whatever else. Much of the decline in the Catholic Church in the U.S. during the past 40 years can be attributed to poor catechesis of our children. The emphasis has been too heavily on the experiential and almost at the total expense of the doctrinal. If you go back before Vatican Council II, there were some things that wasn't maybe you could say there was an overemphasis on doctrine prior to the they went all the way to the other extent. You could take a continuum and you could put, as far as catechesis is concerned, one end you could put strictly doctrinal, at the other end of this continuum you could put strictly experience, and neither one of them in themselves are really that good. It's, you got to draw a happy mean somewhere there between stressing doctrine at the same time applying that doctrine to our experiences and to our life. I think that under John Paul there has been some success in taking the church back.
No. One of the problems that Pope John Paul II said he dealt with, and you're trying to not throw people off the boat and yet keep the boat going in the right direction. Well, Ron, once again, our time has run out on us, and we'll be back again with Keep Holy the Lord's Days. The Lord's Day can keep us holy. May God bless you always and in all ways.